Hello, and welcome to Untangled Resolution's presentation of The Problem is the Answer. I am your host, Batabi Levantombeni, and this program has been pre-recorded for your convenience. I'm out of town this weekend, so the show isn't live today, but I know that you will be truly inspired by what I have to share with you. My guest is Sugar Ray, a community activist who shares with us how he came from being the worst of the worst, as he put it, to dedicating every ounce of his passion and power to inspiring others to change their lives and serve their communities. I asked Sugar Ray to be on the show because I want to celebrate people who are pro-actors, not reactors, people who do not wait for help and services to come from somewhere else, people who realize that the power to create the kind of community anyone would want to live in lays within the hands of the people who populate it. The Problem is the Answer is brought to you by Untangled Resolutions, a private practice in couples and divorce mediation. Untangle your relationships without losing your shirt or your mind. Check into my website at www.123untangled.com or write to me at info@123untangled.com. You are listening to Rope Dojo from Michelle Webb's album, DC Istanbul. Sit back and enjoy while everyone gathers. I'll be back with you in just a moment. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. One of the things I like to do on the show is to feature people who are taking the initiative to address issues in their neighborhood. They're not waiting for anyone to come in and fix things. They're not waiting for the government. They're not waiting for nonprofits, but they're taking leadership into their own hands. We are facing tough times, and this calls for energetic, imaginative people to take the initiative to use the resources we have to create new resources, to collaborate with others, to join resources and address the issues that we face. I'm in beautiful Bryant Park on the east side of Manhattan right now. It's a beautiful, gorgeous day, and I'm with my new friend, Sugar Ray, who's representing New York City. We talked a bit about where he comes from, and, you know, I'm used to doing things by borough. I introduced the show saying that I'm from Harlem.
Yes, yes.
But Sugar Ray is celebrating the city of New York, the whole city. It's a beautiful city. Sugar Ray is a community activist and a dedicated member of our community. We're here to talk about his experiences and the ways that he has created to get involved in addressing the very difficult challenges in our communities. And I hope that in listening to him, you can develop your own ideas, reach out to others, and use his life and his experiences and the things that he's chosen to do with his life as an example for you to figure out ways that you can pitch in and do your part to improve our lives. Sugar Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for having me. It's definitely a beautiful day. You know, definitely nothing. There's nothing satisfies me more than talking about, you know, ways to help our people. You know, so on a beautiful day, what else is there to do in this beautiful morning than to talk to you about how we can help our people, help our community become better, become stronger?
Well, you know, Sugar Ray, we've become friends on Facebook, and that's how we met.
Yes.
And one of the things that I'm always impressed by is how passionate you are about whatever it is that you're doing, the issues that you bring up and so forth. You write with such passion. And I want to start by talking about where that passion comes from.
You know, the project, you know, the ghetto. A lot of my friends are still in jail. They've been in jail for 8, 9, 10 years. Some are never coming home. Some have a lot more time to do. some are no longer here with us. So I'm definitely thankful to still be here. You know, I would say one, if I'm going to use something outside of myself that helped me change was the fact that I did not want my family to see me dead in the streets. You know, from something that I did to myself, basically. You know, so I had to make a change for myself, for my family, for my mother.
Was it difficult?
With the change?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I was already tired of what I was doing. I was doing it for a long time since I was a kid. So I was at a point at 25 years old, 24 years old, where it was like, I'm tired. You know, doing this, I can never really use my full potential. You know, I can never really travel the world helping people, making people love me if I'm doing something illegal.
Yeah, right.
You know, so the change, it was, I mean, of course it's a struggle and everything. You know, struggles, you know, once an addict, always an addict. Once you do something you like, you know the thoughts are always there. It's a matter of controlling them and mastering them and knowing how to change that energy, change those thoughts into something different. So,
you know, I gave a workshop a few weeks ago at an alternative to incarceration program on Staten Island, and I was talking with the young people there about the power of the words and about using words to resolve disputes. And we talked a bit about how violence is an inefficient way to address disputes and so forth, and I taught them the way of parlay is what I talked about, and we looked at some scenes from Pirates of the Caribbean, and you know, we engaged in that. But in the conversation that we had, there's an exchange that I had with one of the young men in the program that has stuck with me, and I think will always stick with me. I asked him, you know, has he ever been involved in a negotiation? And he says, yeah, I had to negotiate with a judge. And the negotiation was whether he was going to be sent upstate or he was going to be put on house arrest. And he wanted house arrest. So we talked about needs and interests and positions and that sort of thing. But it was the conversation he described with the judge that just continues to reverberate in my head. He says, well, the judge says to me, you're a menace to society. So this is why we're doing this. So I'm a menace to society, and you know, I have to negotiate with him about house arrest. As he's speaking, I'm thinking to myself, this is his self-image, his way of describing himself. He's been labeled a menace to society, and he has taken that on. So how does that inform his decision-making? You know, I can only imagine how that informs his decision-making. If he's going to go out and do something, he's like, well, I'm a menace to society, so, you know, this is who I am.
But are we not all menace to society if we choose to be?
Well, sure. But what I'm getting at is that I can imagine that you may have experienced similar things, people labeling you, calling you certain things, and you have decided not to accept that and make that who you are. And I'm wondering whether there was a moment that you could point to, or an event or series of events that you remember as being particularly transformative, that said, you know what, I'm not that person they say I am. Because you talked a little bit ago about how even when you were doing what you were doing, you were still always the loving person that you were. So that core of you always existed. So I'm curious about how it was that you came to say, you know, I'm going to put that aside and be who I am. You know, was there a moment or a series of events that brought you to this place?
Nah, it was just the moment that I changed, the moment that my thoughts changed. You know, I have a cousin who, he always told me, you know, if I take half the time that I spend in the streets, put it into something positive, I'll be super incredible, super amazing. You know, the people will love me. But I can't really say that there was a series of events, because when I actually made the change, nothing was happening. It was nothing bad going on. I wasn't going to court for anything. I was just ready to grow. I was ready to soar. I was ready to fly.
Yeah.
I was ready to do what I love, which is writing, acting, helping people, having fun. Not having to worry about who's coming. Not having to worry about the police and things like that. So as far as people labeling me, I mean, like I said, we all are everything. I am everything. Whatever you call me, I am that, if I choose to be that. But I decided in myself that, you know what, I can't easily be a menace to society. I can easily be a thug and a gangster. But why, when I could be a good friend, right, and I could be a good community guy, right, why be that part of me? Why let that part suffer? Why let that part rise? And I would say take precedence when I could be this, and this is more easier,
right,
more laid back,
right,
more rewarding, right? It's more fulfilling, self-fulfilling. I could get more out of life this way, so that was my choice.
But let's talk a bit then about the things that you're doing. You talked about writing, you talked about acting, being out there in the community, and we can also talk about the reward part of it. That, of course, is a great thing that we want to talk about, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me a bit about how you started the initiatives that you're involved in and how that's going.
Back to even when I was doing my illegal things, I've always been a person who cared about people. You know, I would always ask people about their family, you know, how the kids, how the parents, how's things going at home, things like that. So when I decided in my mind to make a change in my daily actions, I got a video camera. You know, I love video, I love film, I love directing, right? I love capturing moments. So I got a video camera and a camera to take pictures. And I went around the city just taking pictures, just filming people. You know, in the beginning, it was just for fun. It was just for fun. But then I realized, you know what, I really have in this video camera and these picture takers, right, taking these pictures and being able to write stories. I have this media. I have the ability to bring awareness to a certain subject. I have the ability to expose certain people who need to be exposed talent-wise and different good things that they're doing. So it was just a video camera, and it grew to, you know what, I can really do this. And I can really have fun doing it. I can make a living doing it. I can get paid doing it. And I can travel doing it. I can meet a lot of great people doing it. So that's what it was, man, just a video camera, capturing certain moments. I remember when the New York Post had that article, you know, about the Black Eight. They shot the Black Eight. They had the press conference downtown somewhere, downtown Manhattan, well, Midtown.
Okay.
Al Sharpton came out, Spike Lee came out. I documented that. No.
So wait, there was an article that was written in the Daily Post and
in the
New York Post, and their headline was?
It was something, they were shooting monkeys. It was two cops and it was two monkeys that they had shot. And it was something in reference to Obama, you know.
So the monkeys had what, escaped from a zoo?
No, it was a picture, it was a cartoon picture.
It was a picture of cops shooting two monkeys.
Yeah,
okay.
Somebody drew a cartoon picture of the cops shooting the monkeys.
Oh.
You know, and
I
it was something.
Okay.
You know, and they had a big protest, you know,
right.
and they was basically boycotting the New York Post.
Right.
And I documented that, you know,
yeah.
I was down there messing people, but I documented that.
Yeah.
You know, and just bringing awareness.
Okay.
And bringing awareness to what's going on in our community.
Right.
You know, so that's it.
So that's how you started, and you
started
in media, and of course it's a medium that's near and dear to my heart, as you know,
yeah.
Video, and then you know, of course, I'm doing the show and
yeah.
that sort of thing. So I share your passion for doing that. So once you got out there taking these pictures and these videos, what did you do with them?
I put them online.
Okay.
You know, I put them online. I sent them out to different different people, you know, to view different people, different states, different cities, you know, people around the country, people around the world will view my stuff, and it built, you know, it built. People realized or people took notice that I cared. I cared about our community. I cared about our people, not just here in New York, but in the country and in the world as well, because we all are facing some of the same struggles. You know, poverty, you know, miseducation, different things like that. You know, the family structure, you know, abuse. We all are facing the same things, really. So I just, I cared, and I just shared it with the world. Whatever pictures I would take, I would put them online. YouTube, MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, email to a bunch of people, everywhere.
What was the response you got?
Overwhelming, you know, love. You know, it was a response filled with love from the people, from all people, of all ages, of all cultures, all religions, man. They embraced me, you know, because I believe that, I'm certain that love is a universal language. Love and peace is something that we all are receptive to love, and we all want peace in our home.
Mm-hmm.
So when I realized that that's what I want, and when I realized that everyone is just like me, they want the same thing, there are no differences.
Right.
The only differences are the differences that we put on ourselves, right, because of our perceptions and our selfish nature. Aside from that, it was like, yo, I am you, and you are me. So if I feel it, it's like, how can you not feel it? How can you not respect it? So the response was just love, accepting.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
But you talk about the universal language of love and about you being at your core a loving person and always having been a loving person. With that comes the action part of it, of expressing love to your community. Beyond sending taking and sending out the pictures and putting forth these messages, there then is also dealing with things that are happening on a daily basis in your community to heal in a loving way. So talk to me a bit about the things that you are doing in a more active fashion on the ground in your community. Perhaps you could talk a bit about some of the challenges that you're still facing and how you are working with people in your community, in our community, actually. to address them?
Well, of course, the challenge is always trying to get people to care about things they should care about naturally. You know, trying to care about the fact that there are men and women in our community who have children, right? Teenage children, young teenage children. And the fact that if somebody pulls out a gun and shoots, it can hit anybody. So trying to get these people to understand that if you are, let's say, entertaining gang members or drug dealers or people who carry guns, it can be you that gets killed, it can be your child that gets killed, it can be your parents that gets killed. So the challenge is always trying to get people to understand that it can be any one of us when it comes to violence, when it comes to gun violence, right? When it comes to any type of violence, really. Any woman can be grabbed in the streets, right? There's no target. We have instinct. The difference between us and animals, we can think rationally. A human has an instinct, you know, I want something. A guy might want something from a female. But because, let's say, maybe he didn't learn how to think rationally or that part of him is not working, he just goes and grabs somebody, just like an animal. He goes, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat right now. It can be any one of us. It doesn't have to. You don't have to be targeted. You don't have to do anything wrong. It's just sometimes that's the way life is, right? So that's one of the challenges, you know. But I'm definitely out there just building with my people, you know, building with the young people, just trying to get them to know what they want, you know what they're interested in, you know, trying to bring out their interest so that myself and my friends and the people who care can better serve them. Dealing with the elders and the housing, you know, Social Security, trying to help them out with things like that. A lot, you know, helping the families grieve, you know, when they lose loved ones, you know, helping them to understand, you know, a little better, try to bring a little peace to them, you know, to their hearts, to their souls.
Talk to me a little bit more specifically about some of these things. You talked about, for example, helping elderly people with housing and Social Security, helping families when they're grieving. What specifically would you do in a situation? Let's say you find out that an elderly neighbor in a building down the street is having trouble with housing and Social Security. What kinds of resources are you able to harness to deal with that issue?
I mean, not much. I just try to, bring understanding to them and then try to reach out to my community, like in Queens. I know a lot of the housing workers and a lot of the people who run the housing through. So I just try to speak to them about what's going on, you know, try to set up a meeting, you know, because a lot of times, as you know, in our communities, the people in power ignore certain people. Right, they ignore the elders, they feel, you know, they live alone or things like that. They send letters and they're, oh, somebody's coming to your house, and no one never comes. So I try to put pressure on them. Listen, this lady over here is complaining. She has no hot water for this amount of time, or has no refrigerator, or the refrigerator's messed up, or her apartment is this and that. And I try to put pressure on the people. You know, I just try to do whatever I can. You know, I'm definitely trying to build more so I have more resources so I can be of more effective help. But right now, just on the ground level.
Oh, you said not a lot, and then you explained all this stuff that you're actually doing, so it doesn't sound like not a lot to me.
I mean, I wish I could do more. Yeah. You know, I wish I could do more. There's always more that can be done.
Sure.
And I'm just striving to, I get to a point. I mean, I guess a guy like me, I'm never satisfied because I know that there's always more that can be done.
Right.
So I'm just seeking that.
You know, I'd like to get your perspective on something that happened this last week in the neighborhood that I've just moved into. And I hesitate to say it because my parents are going to be listening to this, and now the cat's going to be out of the bag. But, you know, in terms of background, you and I almost couldn't be more different in terms of where we grew up. I mean, I grew up in a community where, when I was growing up, the police did not carry guns. In fact, I think we had two, you know, cops in the area. And
yeah.
The idea that there was crime, I think in the entire time that my family has been there, and it's over 35 years, although I'm 27. We all agree that I'm 27.
Yes.
But we've lived there for over 35 years. I think there's been one murder in the entire town, you know, during that time, that we've heard of anyway. So it was a very quiet upbringing. It's taken me time to learn what gunshots sound like.
Mm.
Last Tuesday, I was working out of my office at home, and it was about 4:30 or so in the afternoon, and all of a sudden I heard five gunshots.
Mm.
Boom, 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 right? And I waited for a moment, and I didn't really react because across the street from where I live is a school, and there's, of course, the playground, the blacktop. There was a church that was holding a revival on the blacktop at that time. So it must have been a little later in the afternoon. It was a little bit after 5, but it was still broad daylight. They're holding a revival across the street. There must have been a good 60, 70 people sitting out there. I heard nothing from them. The revival continued as though nothing had happened. The music didn't stop. The talking didn't stop. And it wasn't until about 10, 15 minutes later that I heard sirens coming. That I thought, you know what? Really, something has happened. And it isn't so much that there was a shooting. You know, when we were outside, folks said to me that they figured that there had been a homicide because there were homicide detectives all over the place, and they cordoned off the area and made it a crime scene and everything. And indeed, a male had been shot. The police did not say specifically what had happened to him. I sort of asked, and they're like, well, we're not sure what's going on with him. But then there was also a woman who was a bystander. You were talking about bystanders. It could be anybody. And she happened to be a bystander, and something grazed her leg. So, you know, she was very, very fortunate. She was being looked out for that day. And, you know, we saw her being taken to the ambulance, and she walked. You know, she walked to the ambulance, but she was bandaged up and of course, terrified. What continues to stun me, I suppose, about the situation is the lack of reaction from the people in the revival across the street. I mean, I think if it were my community, either people would have been screaming and running away, or after the situation, they'd all have come out to look to see what was going on. There was no reaction that I could perceive. And, you know, I've sort of broached the topic with different people, and they say, oh, well, people are numb and that sort of thing. But I don't know, with your experience and your perspective, what was going on at that point, you know, based on your expertise in this area?
I mean, what they say is correct. You know, there was a song, you know, a rap song, you know, came out maybe early, mid-90s. And one of the lyrics was like, you know, when they start shooting, we don't stop the music. You know, because we hear it so much. You know, so many gunshots in our communities, so many murders, so many shootings, that people are not scared anymore. Or it doesn't move them, or they just wait to hear, oh, such and such got shot. And, I mean, a lot of people are scared. That's what it comes down to. A lot of people are scared to do something. They're scared to say something. They're scared to act. Some are scared, and some just really don't care. Because it's not them, it's not their family, you know. Our covenant is good, right? Our congregation, we're safe, so we hear about it on the news. Or someone will come in and tell us. It's sad.
And again, I'm still stunned because literally this was across the street. We're talking about 500 feet. We're talking about a distance of not even a block. You know, if I were standing on one side of the street and I hollered, you know, out to somebody who is on the playground, they'd have been able to hear me.
Yeah.
And some people were speculating that, oh, the music was loud. But, you know, what I've come to understand about gunshots, it's louder than thunder. It was louder than thunder. They couldn't have missed hearing it. And so I'm deeply concerned. I'm kind of late to the party, but I'm deeply concerned about how sort of inured, you know, numb is one way of thinking about it. On the other hand, I'm thinking maybe it's because I'm naive and I'm thinking that it's about being numb. You know, something else is going on in that reaction that I'm just not aware of because I'm new to the community.
Some people are tired, you know, they feel like we've been reacting for so long and nothing has changed. You know, so, you know, they react. They're not proactive. You know, so when they react and nothing is done, people give up. They don't care anymore. They seem like, you know what? People are going to die daily. People are going to get shot regardless. So why should I say anything? Why should it be me? Oh, let them do it, you know? And that's so sad because the moment that one of them people who wanted to wait for someone else, the moment that one of their children or their spouse or someone is shot and killed, they're like, oh, where's the help? Where's the people? Same place you are, sitting home, not caring, waiting for somebody else. The chain reaction, and we never get out of it. You know, it's a sad thing. You know, it hurts me. But what else can I do but do what I do? You know?
Now, this is a congregation of about 70 people, by my estimation. It could be something that one can say is epidemic or endemic in the community, it is not the reaction that I'm hearing from you. It's not the kind of reaction that you would have. Your reaction is to go out there and be involved and see
what's
going on. And exactly.
Who did it?
Right, right.
Where's the kid's family? Where's the person's family? What's going on? Let's. Well, what's up? What are you guys doing about this? In fact, what are we doing about this? Simple.
So what has happened in a situation like this? Because you've told me about friends of yours getting shot, people that you know in your neighborhood are getting shot.
It's so tough. You know, coming from where I come from, man, it's not many people who feel like I feel. You know, we've all lost a lot of friends, but some of the people don't care. So it's like, in my community, my personal community, is not many. So not much has happened. I've done my part to raise the awareness. I've done my part to let them know, listen, I'm here. Let's do something. But what can I really do by myself? It's thousands. I live in a community with 14,000 people.
How can people who perhaps are not living in the community... Well, people who are in the community as well, because we're talking to a large audience here. People from many backgrounds.
We can do a million things. You know, we can march in the street. We can walk. You know, we can go to these precincts. We can protest in front of the precincts. There's a million different things that I want to do that I have, but it's like, yo, I'm not going to do it by myself and be a martyr. I'm not going to be a fool. I'm not going to. You know, I need to survive. I need to be here for a long time. You know, I'm not trying to be in a situation where my life and my future is jeopardized because I care. I'm not saying, I am risking my life for it. But I'm not going to do it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sit there and I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry, but I'm not going to. So, I'll continue to do it the way I do it, and hopefully I can form a big enough army that soon enough I can go to my community and they can see either that I'm serious, but they should know that I am. They do know that I'm serious about what I do and what I speak about, you know. But hopefully get them on board and realize, listen, man, we're losing too many young people. Too many people in general are getting killed. Right here, and my project is only six blocks, six block radius, 96 buildings, six blocks, and we've lost tons of people to murder.
Wow.
Tons of people, man, and the murder happens, and people over there drinking, eating, like nothing.
At the moment.
At the moment, somebody get killed laying right on the floor, and there's people over there drinking and smoking, eating, laughing, joking. Like nothing. Like it's not a dead body right here. You know what I mean? So, man, it pisses me off.
That is so deep.
I pray on it, man. And I just pray that I can get bigger in spirit. That I'm led to a place where I meet enough caring people that we can go to our communities, right? Section by section, and really make a change,
mm-hmm.
right? And the people who live in a community, they'll realize that, you know what, I need to do something. And if not, yo, it could be you. Simple as that.
Let's talk a little bit about root causes, and then I want to talk about the police for a moment. But let's talk about root causes. You know, you're talking about a situation where somebody can get shot and people around take no notice of it. Really, it happens so much, I suppose, that it no longer is a big deal.
Yeah.
But the person who's doing the shooting is doing it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I talk about with these young people on Staten Island is that, from my perspective, I suggested to them that there is no such thing as senseless violence.
No, look.
There's no such thing as senseless violence. There's always a reason. So, looking back to your own life and growing up and the influences that you had around you, what you saw as being the opportunities in life and so forth, why does it happen?
Why do people do the shootings?
Why do people do the shootings? Why do people, you know, and it sounds like a really naive question. I mean, I have some answers myself, but I'm asking the question for the person who's totally unfamiliar.
I mean, it boils down to the fact that, yo, man, we don't care about ourselves. If we don't care about ourselves, we can care less about you. So why not shoot you? I don't care if there's kids around. I don't care. I don't care about myself. I don't care about the kids. So I'm going to pull up the gun and I'm going to shoot. Whoever gets hit, gets hit. I didn't mean it. And I didn't. But I don't care. So, you know, and of course, us not caring about ourselves, that comes from something. You know, there's no effect without a cause. A lot of it has to do with, upbringing, family life, environment, things like that. There's so much, though, psyche, our mind, things that happen to us, plays a part. And like I said, when you don't love yourself, you can't love anybody else. I don't care how much you might like the person and want to care about the person. But if you don't have love for yourself, and love for yourself, man, it's not just liking that you look good, and it's making sure you take care of yourself, making sure that you are not doing anything to jeopardize and to risk your future, your well-being, your health, right, your life, right? And then when you can grasp that and begin to love yourself, right, like my brother Jeffrey, love yourself. So when you can love yourself, then you can increase the peace and stop the negativity.
You're talking about Jeffrey Davis.
Right. Yes, his foundation, Love Yourself, Stop the Violence.
Mm-hmm.
It's key. You have to love yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
Teach self-love, realize your self-worth. Right, and when once I realized that, that's when I stopped. That's when I made the change. When I realized, once I remember who I was, I remember that I am great. I'm a being of light. I have unlimited power inside of me to do anything. And if people can realize that more, I believe we'll have less crime, less murders, less shooting, because they'll think twice and be like, you know what? Hurting this person is hurting me, because this person might be the person to save my life, but I kill him, so now I have no. So now, when it's my time, I'm gone. See, we're all connected, man, but so many people don't see it. All they see is the differences, the different dress styles, the different where we talk, where we come from, the different religions, and it separates us.
There's an author named Dale Carnegie who wrote a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And there's a line in that book that has always stuck with me, and it says, people become who you say they are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
People become who you say they are. So you're talking about this sort of emptiness where, a person doesn't care about themselves, and so they don't care about other people. They're labeled a menace to society, and they take that on into themselves. And so when they go out and do something, there's no thought to it. Until they think of themselves as a being of light with limitless powers, as you said. So it sounds to me like one of the ways that this really can be addressed is in talking to people about their own self-value.
Yes, absolutely.
And helping people to become convinced
absolutely.
Of their own self-value.
Absolutely, that's the education that I give, self-education. Right? They say knowledge yourself, realizing who you are, what you're capable of, where you come from, what are you made of, what's inside of you, right? Because it worked for me, and I know that I was one of the worst. And I taught it to myself. I had people who helped guide me, but it came through a lot of my self-meditation. Just being alone in my room in the dark, chilling, music, just thinking about my life and where I'm going. And I realized, like I said, but I definitely believe that that is the education that we need to teach. History, where we come from, who are we as a people, what's inside of us. How powerful is our mind, right? How powerful, how strong and fragile is our heart? Our soul, what is it? I believe if we can talk about things like that, we change a lot of people. Because we all got it inside of us. Every single person has the same exact thing. We all made up the same stuff. Come from different places, but we made up the same thing. Love, light, truth, peace, right? That's what they have the law, right? Disturbing the peace. Because peace is first. Peace is at the core. Right, is us with our selfishness and our perceptions of what we want, right? Because we want everything our way. When things don't happen, then we get in the uproar and we disturb the peace. But peace is there. Everybody has it. Everybody wants it. It's how to make people understand. Now listen, just be. Stop wanting too much, man. This is the world, man, that is quick, fast. Like a car going by, it's gone.
In an instant,
it
can all be gone. It's interesting you mentioned the law and peace and disturbing the peace, because there is that facet of things, that aspect of things having to do with the relationship between our communities and the law. And there's a program, for example, in Brooklyn with St. Paul Community Church and Antioch Baptist Church, where there's a collaboration with the district attorney's office, the Brooklyn district attorney's office, to help folks deal with their C summonses. So there's an instance where you see some kind of a positive collaboration going on. But you talked about one of the actions that folks can take would be protesting from the precincts and so forth. And so that brings me to
think about the relationship between the communities and the police. You know, after the shooting this last Tuesday, we were outside, you know, folks who live in the neighborhood, and the police came by and they were asking, did anybody see anything? And truly, I hadn't seen anything. I was up in my apartment. There was no way that I could have seen anything. But the way that the police were asking the question, you know, I understood that for them the expectation is that I'm going to lie and say I didn't see anything even if I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear from police officers, because I do mediations with police officers, and I hear from the police officers that one of the greatest challenges that they have in dealing with crime is not getting cooperation from the community.
No cooperation.
Talk to me about that.
Nobody wants to speak, right? Everybody thinks that, you know, talking to the police is means you're snitching, right? If I'm a father, right, and my son is outside, my son is 15 years old, and the kid is murdered, right? Kid is murdered and my son sees it, right? And I know my son sees it. My son comes upstairs shook and tells me. And the cops come in and try to talk to my son. I tell my, yo, he didn't see anything. So your son didn't see anything, so the murderer is still on the streets. So the next time the murderer decides to pull out a gun and have beef with someone, he just shoots wild and maybe your son gets killed. It's a fine line between snitching and doing the right thing. You know, the right thing is if you see something, say something. Right? The snitching thing comes into place where if we're both doing something wrong, like if we both commit a robbery and I get caught and I tell them, yo, she did it too, then that's snitching. Other than that, it's doing the right thing, man. But people are scared, you know, snitches get snitches.
Well, where you, I was going to ask, what is the, you know, what fuels the fear?
Snitches get snitches. I ain't saying nothing. I mean, not even snitches, because people not even getting killed for snitching anymore. They just don't want to tell. Oh, I don't want to be labeled no snitch. Why do you care what people, I thought you don't care what people think. See, people have a funny way, right? People's belief system is really, really, really funny. And you can tell by the language, by the way they talk, the things they do. They say, I don't care about what people think about me. The second is like, well, tell a cop you just saw that lady get robbed. I ain't want to be labeled no snitch. Labeled a snitch. You don't want to be a snitch or be labeled a snitch.
Hmm.
And are you snitching if you're telling? Who knows? Who cares?
Still, there's the hostility,
between the police.
Between the police and the...
Oh, I mean, that comes from a lot of things. You know, a lot of people just hate the police for no reason. But, of course, there are a lot of police who do things. It warrants them to have, you know, a negative response from the people. But it can be a beautiful thing. You know, it can be a beautiful relationship, you know, because for the most part, police are here to protect and serve. And we have a sickness, man. We have a sickness, right? People complain about the cops stopping people when they're drinking and stuff like that. But how many times have people been drinking, have not been stopped, and there's been a murder? Someone has gotten shot. You know what I mean? So it's like, come on, like, really, like, who we mad at? Are we mad at the cops, or are we just mad that we know we're doing something wrong, and we feel can't nobody tell us nothing? And it's so big, but then it's so small, because it could be taken care of easily if people just stopped, thought for a second, and spoke with, you know, a little bit of intelligence and a little bit of love. The police to the people to the police. You can have a better relationship. But as it stands, police harass people about there are people smoking and people riding bikes on the sidewalk that get harassed. And it's like, come on, are you serious? Like, you know? And a lot of people like being harassed, so they get harassed, right, and they get thrown against the wall, right? So then when there's a murder, the cops come asking questions, I don't know nothing. Even if I know everything, I don't know nothing. Why would I help you? So you can throw another one of us in jail? You want to put us in jail anyway. So it's
sounds like a vicious circle.
It is.
Yeah.
Very much so. But
yeah.
It can be broken so easily.
Right. Yeah. You know, the power of the word.
Power of the word.
Coming back to the power of the word. And you're right. It can be so easy, because it is about people talking with each other as human beings. Human beings to
yes.
Human beings. You know, when the police officer takes off his uniform or her uniform, they go back to their own communities. They're members of their communities as well. The people
mm-hmm.
just like, and that actually can contribute to some of the issues that you face, because you've given a human being this kind of power, the power of the law. And so sometimes they take human actions and
mm-hmm.
use human reactions
mm-hmm.
in their executing their duties, right? And so you talk about people getting thrown up on the wall, people mm-hmm. being harassed and that sort of thing, and so you've got this negative relationship mm-hmm. that's going on. Meanwhile, in times of crisis where life is on the line, mm-hmm. you know, people are coming and reacting to the police and mm-hmm. working against the police, mm-hmm. Referring back to those, you know, negative encounters that they've had and to the resentment and hostility that they have with the police. But you are on the track of using the power of the word
yes.
to deal with that situation. So talk with me a bit about the future. What is the future for Sugar Ray?
I'm just more building, man. You know, more building. You know, more knowledge, more truth. You know, more light. Just building, man. Connecting my people. You know, connecting the different organizations, the different people who care. You know, to each other, so that we can be of a better foundation, of a better base, being able to serve the nation and the world as a whole, right? Helping more people. I mean, my life is simple. You know, I live a very simple life. You know, I'm writing, I'm organizing my book. You know, a few books I'm gonna put out. You know, in due time, soon enough. You know, I got the Penny campaign coming up soon. You know, that's launching September 5th to May 30th, 2012. We're looking to raise $20,000 a minimum, you know, so that we can help as many youth, young women, right, in the New York and New Jersey area, right, and then spread out, of course, to the world. You know, help as many people, as many communities, man. You just want to, you know, I'm just a builder. Just building, man, building and connecting. You know, it's my occupation. It's to build, to connect, right? It's like a craftsman.
Right.
You know, crafty things, right? You know, sketching and sculpture,
right.
And things like that. And that's my life. So what the future is just more of that. More of that, you know, in a, in a bigger way.
Right.
In a bigger way. Reach more people.
You know what I wish? I wish people could see how your eyes light up and how you smile when you talk about the things that you're looking to achieve in the future. When you're talking about hope and about progress, and about all the activities that you're involved in, what you expect to come from them. And at the beginning of our conversation, we talked a little bit about reward. So talk to me a bit about the personal reward that you experience in doing the work that you do.
Peace, love, and happiness. Even with the personal struggles, the emotional struggles, the mental strain, I'm at a place of peace that I've never dreamt of being.
Mm.
You know, in the midst of everything, in the midst of the storm, like hell is around me, but I'm at peace. You know, I'm at total peace. The inside of my core is just peaceful at all times. Love, man, the love that I receive from the people, it's amazing. You know, whenever I really reach out for support for anything, right, if it's the magazine that I'm selling or whatever it is that I'm doing, the support is incredible, you know, it's overwhelming, you know, so from the well wishes to the kind words to the people coming out supporting this, it's unbelievable, you know, and happy, extremely happy, you know, extremely happy. It's like, if we're designing a building, if we're making a building, my happiness is already at the roof. It cannot grow any taller.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that can happen now, I can fill it up more,
right.
Become more full,
right.
More things, more people, right? Let's say schools. Build more schools, build more things like that to really add to my happiness. But it cannot be any bigger than what it is. Mm-hmm. Life is good.
Life is good.
Life is good.
Well, Sugar Ray, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
For coming on and talking about the challenges that are being faced and then talking about hope and love and participation, that we have the power. You said, you know, you have the power to do anything. We do have the power in our own neighborhoods to deal with the situation. We don't need to wait for anybody to come in and rescue us.
No.
We are the answer.
We are the question and the answer.
We are the question. My tagline is,
yes.
The title of the show, the problem, is the answer.
Absolutely.
The problem is the answer.
You know, one thing, you know, when I founded my ministry, right, you know, mission, cause, and things like that is to instill hope, to create opportunity for people, right? To instill hope where there is none, where it seems like hope has been lost. To create opportunity where it seems like there's no opportunity, right? To save lives, to change lives, to shape futures, right? Because we are like, especially the younger people, they're like clay. They can be shaped and molded to whatever you want as long as you stick with it enough, right? Some have been, let's say, water has fell on some, a lot more water, so they become a little more stiffer early. Mm-hmm. But if you're diligent and you're crafting and you're shaping, you can still shape it, right? You can shape anything, man. Anything can be shaped to your liking. Right. As long as you know how to, you know, let's say where to hit the mark, where to hit the target. Everyone has a different point that will wake them up. You know, some people you could talk about slavery. Some people you could talk about, you know, financial education. Some people you could talk about, you know, the streets. Some different things you got to talk with different people. You got to be flexible. We have to be flexible in our approach, in our deliverance of who we're delivering to, and what are we delivering. You know, but life is good, man, and we live in a great world. You know, we live in a great country, and we can make it whatever we want it to be if we are sincere enough and diligent enough.
You mentioned your ministry, and I'm curious about how people can reach out to you and participate, contribute, you know, do what they can.
I don't have a website up currently, you know, but my ministry is Heal the World Ministries. You know, I got a group on Facebook. Heal the World Ministries, and my email is healtheworldministries@gmail.com. You know, they can reach me there. The website will be built shortly. You know, and it's a website, man. I mean, it's a ministry, man. It's really three, let's say, key missions, man. And one is to promote peace, to promote brotherhood, to promote right fellowship, to promote community, right. Two, I have a fond, I'm very fond of the less fortunate people, homeless people. So to feed, clothe, and shelter the homeless, right? To bring in clothes in the winter times, fall's coming up, to collect as many clothes and give to the shelters, to go on the streets and give to the people, right? And to feed them at any opportunities that I can, or that we can, right? Just to find shelter. And, I mean, lastly, but definitely not least, is to empower, educate, enlighten our youth, men and women, boys and girls. You know, so that's my ministry there. And the other things that fall under it, you know, as far as corresponding with people in prison, you know, helping people get reintegrated in society, things like that, man. But it's definitely a street-based ministry. You know, definitely a street-based ministry. Anyone can be a part. It doesn't matter your religion. It doesn't matter anything, because we deal with love and peace and unity. You know, we deal
with... transcends all religions.
Transcends all religions.
All creeds.
All creeds.
All people.
Simple. You know, with peace, we can find happiness. With love, we can find peace. Right? And with unity, the power of unity... power of two or more together, unimaginable.
Right.
You know, so that's what I promote, and that's what I focus on. That's it.
Wow. What a wonderful opportunity I've had to talk with you. I'm so glad that we took this chance out here in Bryant Park.
Yeah, it's beautiful, Bryant
Park. Beautiful day to talk about things that are challenging, but to talk about them from a perspective of hope. So I hope for you a wonderful rest of your day and weekend, and joy in whatever you take up as your next endeavor. And I look forward to having you back to talk a bit more about the things you're doing.
Yes, yes, yes. The 18th, it's September 18th, we're doing a penny campaign.
Exactly.
Penny campaign, yes, yes.
Absolutely.
That's going to be the vision I have for that. You know, I started writing a story where I give a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because I use the things that I'm doing, the things that I'm looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
I put them in stories. So my story that I started writing is The Brown Ones Nobody Wants.
Okay.
Right? And I'm using a little girl, Natasha Jenkins. You know, she's a character, 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And of course, she's a brownstone girl.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's with her family.
Mm-hmm.
But I relate the brownstone people and the brown pennies, right? Nobody wants them. People throw them away. Imagine if you collect them and put them together.
Mm-hmm.
How much change will you have?
Mm-hmm.
How much change will you have to make change?
I love it. I love it.
So that's my story, man. I sent it to you. I should be done by Monday.
Okay.
I should be finished. I'm definitely going to work on it all weekend.
Okay.
Definitely
all
a short story. And then I'll send it to you to read.
So I'll have that background. And when we get together on the 18th, we'll be able to delve into that story and to the penny contained.
Yes.
Wonderful. Awesome.
Bless.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. God bless. Peace.
This has been Untangled Resolutions presentation of The Problem is the Answer, coming to you from Bryant Park in New York City. Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope that you have been as inspired as I am, and I encourage you to do what Sugar Ray is doing. Look around you for the ways that you can personally become active in your communities. The power to create the world that you want to live in is in your hands. I leave you now with a piece by the Mighty Third Rail. It is called The Undead, from their first album, Classic. The Mighty Third Rail have just released their second album, called Death Boogie. You can check it out on iTunes. Listen carefully to the piece you're about to hear, because we've got a whole lot of work to do. I hope you join me again next week. Have a wonderful week, everyone.
I have a bit of a confession to make. I see. I see dead people all the time. During cat naps in the form of my grandparents' youth, they approach me with uncomfortable smiles and they say, we are the undead. We are the ones thrown overboard. We built a city out of our bones at the bottom of the ocean. Made a home near the ruins of the Atlantis. We march from the shores of the Atlantic. The wind lifts us and carries our spirits and spreads our ashes through the valleys of this land. It's forsaken us. We are souls of mischief. We leave puddles of Katrina water in the Oval Office. Place grains of Iraqi sand at the president's bedside. We are smallpox infected. Tuskegee experiment perfected. Government approved. We are the history admitted in your public schools. The unsung genocide. We are the runaways that never found freedom. Ransacked and raped. Gagged, gouged, and gutted. Left as food for the maggots. Tossed in the Tallahatchie River. We are celebrity rappers. Slain without a clue. We are the foul smell of injustice from 41 to 50 shots and beyond. We are the melodies of plantation songs. The unsung verses in your battle hymns. The click and clack of chain gangs whose prisoners are wrongfully accused. We are invisible men and women, the split atoms of Japanese children, the story of four little girls, flowers cut before bloom, faded chalk outlines, single digits of today's death count. We are peacekeepers and revolutionaries, pacifists and activists, assassinated ministers of God. Do not call us victims or casualties or martyrs. Do not doubt our presence, because you can't get rid of us. There ain't no stopping us. We are the undead, possessing you and teaching you to speak in tongues, what you call poems. We are the chill you get when truth crawls up your neck, the backbone that aligns your spine to walk with pride. We are the cool in your strut, the willpower that pushes you to victory, the fiber in your muscles, flex and tone towards the finish line. We made redemption in art form and birth culture. We are the bounce in your dance moves, the pop and lock in your hip hop, the swagger in your funk. Our screams are the high notes in your jazz riff. We are gone but not forgotten, battered but never broken, existing forever in the banks of your memories, prominent, brilliant, bold, thriving and alive. We survive through you, and you got a whole lot of work to do. You got a whole lot of work to do. You got a whole lot of work to do.